Good morning, everybody. It's a very bright day here at UBM headquarters. All sunshine, not a single cloud on the sky. Just have a look at slide 3 rather than outside of your window. Earnings are up between 30 and 45%. Equity stands at 450 million euro or 36% equity ratio. Today's cash stands at more than 270 million euros, including proceeds for the most successful bond we have ever issued. Firing power, both in terms of balance sheet potential as well as net debt capacity, is at a max. Our 2 billion euro pipeline is pointing the right direction. And we are not only going to deliver another record year in 2019, but are also optimistic to grow our earnings, in 2020 and 2021. No worry. I haven't smoked any forbidden substances. Just listen to our CFO, Patrick, and you will understand why my endorphins are dancing boogie-woogie.
Thank you, Thomas, and good morning, everybody. As you can see on slide number 4, we are on track to deliver on our promises and are up for another record year. Net profit rose by more than 37% to 38 million euros. Also, earnings before taxes showed a profit jump of almost 31% to 46 million euro. As a consequence, earnings per share showed a very positive development as well. At 5.30 euro, after the first 9 months, earnings per share have already reached the level of our record year 2018, with still a quarter to go. 2019 was originally planned as a transition year due to fewer project completions than in 2018 and also the upcoming years 2020 and 2021. Due to our successful sales activities in the summer of this year, it turns out to be more than that. Of special note is the forward sale of the last building section of the office project QBC 1-2 and the sale of 2 Disney hotels in Paris. In both projects, we have a partner, so they are accounted at equity. Another major sale was the trade sale of a development site near Munich, which already led to positive fair value adjustments in the second quarter. Despite the fact that the fair value adjustments of the first half have meanwhile resulted in executed contracts, they still have to be shown as fair value adjustments under IFRS. The strong earnings growth due to our successful sales activities could even overcompensate negative currency effects from the Polish zloty. These currency effects amounted to almost 6 million euros as of September 30th. The reporting period's result was marked by a below average tax rate of only 17.5%. The low tax rate was predominantly influenced by the composition of our results. 2 of the 3 mentioned major transactions are shown in the at equity result. This means these results enter the P&L statement already taxed and therefore appear in the full consolidated P&L as tax-free. For the full year 2019, especially as in the year-end accounting, all tax topics are subject to a detailed evaluation, please do not assume the tax rate of the first 9 months to be sustainable. Following our guidance, we have the tax rate between 23 and 28% on a full year basis. Nevertheless, the stage is set for a new record year in 2019 as previously guided. Please turn to slide number 5. On this chart, you find the proof that our approach works when it comes to balance sheet control. When Thomas and me joined the company in 2016, net debt was almost hitting 750 million with a loan to value ratio of 56%. The equity ratio at year-end 2016 totaled 28%, room to maneuver was narrow. Mechanisms to control and steer the balance sheet were in its infancy. We have done our homework since then with a financial strategy focusing on stability and risk awareness. With more rigid control of our development business, with the execution of our pure play strategy. The achieved optimization of our balance sheet also proves of our successful pure play program, PPP. Through the continuous reduction of our standing asset portfolio to currently 355 million euro, cash outside the development business was freed up and funds were allocated to improve balance sheet and debt. By this and our continuous improvement of the financial results, market trust has been reestablished, which resulted in a higher debt capacity, lower interest rates, risk premiums, and the ability to issue longer-term debt. Our loan-to-value ratio currently stands at 34%, and we have a comparatively high portion of unencumbered assets. This capacity opens up potential for further project investments. At the same time, our equity ratio increased by 8 percentage points to 36%, with equity of 450 million at the end of the third quarter. Equity is expected to further grow by year-end as dividend and hybrid payments are done for the year. According to our guidance, Q4's net profit should be 9 million-12 million. With this setup, we are under-leveraged for a developer. The target corridor for our equity ratio ranges from 30%-35%, and our benchmark for net debt to total assets is 50%. UBM has greater room for maneuver than ever, and at least equally important, proven mechanisms of control in place. This means we are ready for more growth. Please turn now to slide number six. Also, from a cash perspective, we are ready for more growth. From year-end 2016 to year-end 2018, our cash level increased fivefold to over 200 million euro. As of the end of September, cash and cash equivalents totaled 172 million euro, which is a snapshot due to the redemption of a 91 million euro bond in July. After the successful issue of our latest bond, the cash position has further strengthened compared to the end of the third quarter. This gives us the necessary short-term flexibility we need when it comes to acquisitions. In 2020, we expect an investment peak for ongoing projects, as we also had several construction starts in the second half of the year. More details on the pipeline and where we plan to invest our money will be presented from Thomas in a few minutes. Please move to the next chart. I have already presented that we have sufficient financial resources at our disposal. On this chart, you can see that we were able to collect this cash at increasingly favorable conditions over the last years. With the latest bond, we were even able to place a six-year bullet loan. UBM is well established on the debt capital market. We are a recurring and reliable bond issuer. Within the last 2 years, we tapped the capital market five times with an overall volume of almost 500 million euros. All of these bonds are showing a strong aftermarket performance. Our latest success story is our first six-year bond with a coupon of 2.75% that was issued this month. The maximum volume of 120 million was oversubscribed after 1.5 hours. Currently, we can refinance at more favorable rates than ever. This has something to do with the current low interest rate environment, of course, but also with the shrinking risk premium of UBM due to our successful financial consolidation, reflecting the trust we were able to build up. This represents a major competitive advantage compared to most non-listed developers, which have to refinance themselves with expensive mezzanine capital. Although we have made great progress in optimizing our financial structure, we don't get tired of continuously re-evaluating all of our financing instruments to uncover further potential, especially as the margin gap between project financing and company debt narrows. Now back to Thomas.
Thank you, Patric. Let's move on to slide number eight, and a little bit more to numbers. So what are the implications of our financials for the business going forward? We can grow our balance sheet by 200 million euros, not even taking into account any potential partnering out effects or opting for forward funding, which could grow our business even more. Our additional net debt capacity is approximately 350 million euros as of today. And most importantly, we see good opportunities for new profitable investments. But let me finish the slide eight before looking into our new projects. On top of the balance sheet and the net debt capacity, further sales of one of our standing assets or more increase our financial room to maneuver. While I keep on telling you that selling down the remaining 350 million of assets we still hold is getting more difficult because of our partners or other reasons, there is still potential. Finally, we trust, and Patrick has mentioned it, we have with the trust that we have built in the capital market, further reduction of financing cost is the other puzzle stone, which supports our ambition to grow and increase our profitability in the future. What is the breakdown of our already existing 2 billion euro pipeline? Have a look at slide 9. As can be seen, our pipeline provides a very balanced portfolio composition, with 42% made up by hotels and 42% consisting of residential. While we have slightly increased the office share to 15%, we remain underrepresented in the deepest asset class in terms of liquidity. This must change, and focus has been put on this asset class, which we want to double in terms of percentage exposure over the midterm. We believe to see an undersupply of office space over the next 3-5 years. Blame it on the gurus who claimed 15 years ago that almost everyone is going to work from home or on the move in the future. We see the contrary being the case, and I have elaborated on it on one of our last calls. Our pipeline remains centered around Germany and Austria, and they make up 70%+ of our future projects. And on the right-hand side of the slide, you see a few pictures of our most recent construction starts and acquisitions. With a little luck, there might be some news flows on new acquisitions, even in the remainder of Q4 or in the near-term future at the beginning of next year. So please stay tuned. Based on our reputation as the largest hotel developer in Europe, being a reliable, fair, and hardworking joint venture partner, and the already mentioned financial muscle, we can afford to make no compromise regarding locations. We focus on 12 metropolises, as you can see them on slide number 10, with all of them coined by the same three features. One, structural undersupply of apartments. Two, lack of modern energy-efficient office space for the demand of the 21st century employee. And three, overnight stays significantly outperform the growth of hotel beds in all of these cities. Subject to no black swan suddenly appearing on the scene, we share the view of CBRE, JLL, and even the ECB that the continental European real estate market is going to maintain its strong momentum. This leads me directly to the last slide of the conference call, slide number 11. From all we have said so far, it goes without saying that we confirm our guidance for 2019 with earnings before tax of no less than 65 million euros and a net profit of up to 50 million euros. What might be even more important at the end of November is our expectation that 2020 is good for more profit growth. This is based on our already existing pipeline and the resulting percentage of completion earnings next year. 2021 should be the ultimate proof for two things. Number one, that the profitability sea level has fundamentally risen, and two, and this is new, this new level of earnings is sustainable and a basis for even more growth. The reason for this lies in the fact that over the last 2 to 3 years, we have not compromised in the quality of newly acquired projects. Continuity of earnings is helped by the POC method, of course. Much more importantly, our acquisitions are made with a view to the requirement of continuous profit growth. It is a mix of quick turners, bread and butter hotel and resi developments, and long-term outperformers. At the same time, we are constantly mitigating risk and improving earnings quality through forward sales and down payments. One requirement for a listed company has been enjoying particular attention over the course of the last 6 months, the increase of recurring earnings. As you all know, we generate some recurring profits from our hotel leasing business, but we want more and you want more. I'm confident that we are able to report on new recurring income streams within the next 6 months, and this might even represent a kind of extension of our business model. Having said this, I am almost certain that we made you curious enough and that you have questions, and Patrick and I will try our very best to answer them. The only question not permitted is what I meant with my last remark. May I thank you for your attention on this bright sunny day and open the line for questions.
Ladies and gentlemen, at this time we will begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star followed by one on their touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star followed by two. If you are using speaker equipment today, please lift the handset before making your selections. Anyone who has a question may press star followed by one at this time. And the first question comes from the line of Stefan Schwarz of SRC Research. Please go ahead.
Good morning, gentlemen. This is Stefan here from Frankfurt. It's a quite rainy, shitty day here, so I'm happy for you and your good quarterly numbers brighten our day at least a little bit. So we have some questions. The first is on page 6 of your presentation. You mentioned that a strong investment year is ahead and that major project acquisitions are under evaluation. Can you please bring a bit more color here about your acquisition pipeline? As you are under-leveraged, you could exploit some interesting opportunities ahead, I think. Perhaps it's better to go to questions step by step.
Yeah. Thanks, Stefan, and I'm happy to cheer you up in Frankfurt. Maybe you should think of relocating to Vienna, but I must admit it's only, as I said, in the UBM headquarters that the weather is so sunny. More color on our acquisitions. This is a two-edged sword. Because I'm not supposed to talk about unlaid eggs, and I think we've also built a reputation that we first deliver and then talk. Still, what I can say is that I think we are also making progress in executing larger scale projects, which do then make a difference. And sometimes it's not appreciated enough that continuously our acquisition pipeline is coined by our sales. And so the acquisition pipeline to be kept stable is quite something. And now we take it a step further and believe that the growth of our acquisition pipeline is still possible. You will see that happen. The thing that we are committed and promise is that it's not going to go down.
Okay. Okay. On page 15 of your presentation, there are four residential projects to be completed in 2019 and 2020, which are listed as partially sold. Perhaps you can give us an update here on the sales quotas.
Yes, I have to start telling you that our usually excellent IR department made a mistake. I see Anna sitting opposite me, because Anderswohnen in Munich is now 100% sold, but Anna said it is at quarter end. So the first project in Munich is fully sold by now. In Berlin, the now new house project is 90% sold. Some of our investors have seen it. It's partially a historical building and partially a new built building. And all I can tell you, if I had a plan to move to Berlin, where again the weather is not as good as it is in Vienna, so no plan, I would definitely take an apartment there. Then we have Neugraf in Prague, which is 45% sold, at least according to the last report. We've stopped the sales process because we saw a huge upswing in prices that people are prepared to pay over the course of the year. And so we've decided to kind of, you know, hopefully benefit from this one. And it's very good because, you know, it's I think, in the first floor in the, of the construction. So it's by far not finished. And Waterkant in Mainz, finally, which is 75% approximately sold.
Okay. Okay, thank you. The next question is about Poland, the Polecki Business Park. Perhaps you can give us an update. What is in your books right now from this project, and what is your target for, let's say, the end of next year?
Yeah, good question. Somewhere in the backup, I would have to look it up. We have a breakdown of our standing assets, which is slide number 34. And there you see that Polecki Park is given with the 150 million price tag, our participation, you know. We have a partner in it. And that is also reflective of the book value. As I told you, we've decided to sell Polecki piece by piece and not as a whole. And that, of course, brings a completely new situation. I'm confident that I can report on progress the next time we are on the phone.
Okay, that means it could even happen that you make it this year?
Look, such a sales process, and I know that the capital market is very impatient, takes its time, you know. First you sign an LOI, then it depends on with whom you sell it, how, you know, high the likelihood is. It's always above 75%. But then you go through the due diligence, you have a red flag phase, you circle back, and at the end, the sales process always takes longer than you would expect. As I said, with Christmas being so close and us having had such a good year, we don't put pressure on anybody because usually time pressure works against you. I'm pretty confident that the news flow for the beginning of next year is going to be a very positive one.
As you know, Thomas, the festive season and Christmas is overrated. So if you can do it between the years or so, nobody would decline. So
I can assure you, to the extent that Peter Oberhuber, our managing director in Poland, is on the phone, he has not had one Christmas to New Year's Eve break ever since I've joined the company. So I'm confident that he follows this tradition.
So I hope at least his bonus is good then. So
that remark to be deleted, please, from the record.
So the next question is, the revenues from your hotel business were down after you sold the two Paris hotels recently. So can you tell us a little bit about the underlying performance of the other hotels in terms of the revenues and in terms of margins?
Let me remind you that we've partnered out our hotel operating business. So the revenues in the hotel operating business are down because they're only 50%, okay? Or I shouldn't say the revenues, I should say the output, because they are an output number and not the revenue number. Overall, I think your question goes to the performance of the hotels. We have, you know, always winners and losers. There's no difference. Overall, okay, we are spot on budget. We see some issues, challenges in Amsterdam. I think I've talked about it the last time. If tourists don't feel welcome, they tend not to book, and it is no help that you have hotel rooms and no new hotel rooms or beds are going to be created. And then we have some outperformers in, to mention only one in Poland, and that's the beauty of having a portfolio of 13 hotels. If you have a portfolio, usually you at the end are getting very close to budget, and we are spot on budget.
Okay. You sold a development land reserve near Munich. Can you explain a little bit more? It was not suitable to start a new development project for your company, or how can you explain?
It was not a land reserve. It was a fully developed project. I think I've been very open with you, and I hope that I'm not making a mistake saying we were hoping to build the headquarters for Wirecard there, and we were hoping so for 2 years. They are so busy expanding that we did not feel that they are focused enough on what is for them a side aspect. And so we've sold a project, a developed project for more than 60,000 square meters without executing it ourselves. Why have we done so? It is in line with our risk mitigation strategy because we've acquired the Bauberger Straße logistics plot within the city boundaries of Munich. This is 3 hectares. And we would have otherwise had too much of a concentration of large scale projects in Munich.
Okay. Yeah, can you say a little bit more about the Bauberger Straße and the progress here?
Well, I love this project because it enjoys a maximum attention from everybody. I think it is in line with the strategy of Munich, who wants to increase the number of residential space. At the same time, it offers upside for what is an ugly German word, störendes Gewerbe, which is nothing else but people, you know, who can't afford to have a workshop within Munich and therefore have to transport their pipes and whatever business it is from outside to the city center and back again. So we are having very good talks with the city of Munich. They are very supportive. As we've announced in our press release, which is already a while ago, we put maximum focus on closely cooperating with the authorities there.
So you need some permits. You expect the permits to come during the next year to have all the permits.
Well, we need what is called in German a B-plan. Because obviously, as it is in the center of a residential area, we are not planning to refurbish this and leave it as a logistics enterprise. We are planning to do a mixed project there as described. We've given you a time horizon of 3 to 4 years. And of course, being optimists these days, we hope that it's closer to 3 years than 4 years to get the rezoning.
Okay. So I could read in your quarterly report that you sold 25% at the Sugar Palace in Prague. Perhaps you can tell us why.
Yeah, the first thing is we, for full transparency reason, have already mentioned this. The transaction is not closed yet because of this process of doing the due diligence and red flag and what have you. It's in line with our asset light strategy. We've told you that one of the risk mitigations is that we try to broaden our portfolio and thereby spread the risks more evenly, and that is exactly what we are also doing there. We are partnering out the one or other project. You know that the Sugar Palace is a 3-digit million Euro project that's sizable, and that's perfectly in line with what we plan also going forward in Prague.
Okay. So I could also read...
Stefan, let me interrupt you, sorry. How many more questions do you have? Because otherwise I would give somebody else the chance to ask some questions and
just,
circle back.
Just
to
two more questions.
Good.
More questions, but if you want, I can drop the question.
Let's try to be quick there.
Okay, why you bring down the valuation for the Leopold Quarter in Vienna?
I jump into this question, Stefan. I'm grateful that you haven't asked too many financial questions, as my voice is disappearing today a bit due to a cold, a Männerschnupfen. So we have done at half year already. That has to do with the process we have with the city here in order to get our project done. We decided at half year, due to the fact that two things have changed here, the Paragraphen 69, it's called, that has to do with the building we were planning to do, and we thought we can do it within the original permit we have, which seems to be more difficult than assumed. And the second thing has to do with residential, the residential part of the project, because it is a lot with four pieces. and the residential part of the project, there is a two-third thing coming up from the city, which is with which part of the residential you have to go to social, more social residential pieces. And that was the other reason why we decided to be more cautious on this one and had the write down on this.
Okay. I could also read the devaluations in Poland. Perhaps you can give a little bit more color here.
Yes, these are two. One is Gdynia, a shopping mall we have there for quite a while. That has to do with the rents we are expecting there. It is rented out, but we had some discussions with the leases there and figured out that the rents might come down, and if the rents are coming down, you need to adjust the value. The second one is Osnowitz. That is a development also for a shopping mall. We were looking into the possibility to do there, instead of a shopping mall, a more residential type project. And by doing so, we figured out that the value we have in our books should be a bit lower. And that was the second.
Can you tell us the magnitude of these two devaluations?
It was roughly 5 million, the two of them.
Okay. Thank you. That's all.
Thanks for the questions.
The next question is from the line of Andrei Remke of Baader Bank. Please go ahead.
Yeah, good morning. Good morning together. Do you hear me?
Loud and clear.
Okay, thank you very much. So also a couple of questions, but of course the question on the your last comment would be of high interest, but I have to accept to wait on that. So my first question is on your initiative to increase the office share in your pipeline. Which region seems to be most interest for you for office developments? Is it again Germany? And also, do you hear focus on larger scale projects, and the other way around, which asset class from the existing pipeline would probably shrink in relative terms, residential or hotels? So do you record any indications of less demand for these two asset classes rather than for office? What is your view on that? This is the first question, please.
Yeah. Excellent. Well, let me remind you, we've changed our communication strategy. So we are not talking about countries. We are talking about metropolis. And when we think of office, we think of two cities that are already in our focus, Berlin and Vienna. That doesn't exclude the others, but you've asked about large-scale projects, and the large-scale projects that I have in mind, okay, are circulating around these two cities. What asset class has to shrink? Well, that's a mathematical function. If you have 40% in residential and 40% in hotel, and the remaining is 15 plus 5, and I've rounded now the numbers, both hotel and residential have to come down a little bit to make room for office. Let me also be clear, this is a typical, you know, discussion that you can have on a green table. It is, of course, a bit opportunistic. What counts is we are sitting together in the executive committee regularly, and we are discussing why are we not making more progress with office if we all believe in office, blah, blah, blah. So it's, I think, more important that the mindset, okay, is also strongly geared towards this office. And I've told you why we believe it has, and for good reason, enjoys more attention that we've paid in the last, say, couple of quarters.
Yeah, and Well, but the question also is, do you see any indication of less demand in residential due to more regulation from institutional investors and also in the office sector, which was in high demand over the last couple of years? Probably more and more interest goes, of course, in the liquid asset class asset from institutional investors.
No. Jein is the right answer. We see demand for all three asset classes. Okay. Of course, the discussion both in Berlin and in Vienna do not help from an investor's point of view. You know, it's sometimes asking too much from overseas investors when they hear about Mietendeckel and what have you in Berlin. Okay, to go into more detail, they just say no. Which is very sad because the international investors are usually overweight in office and would like to balance out their global portfolio by going stronger into residential. Okay? But it has nothing to do with the demand. It has more something to do with our obsession of portfolio theory. Okay, we believe that under portfolio theory, you have to kind of, you know, provide a balanced portfolio. We now have in our pipeline 42% in two asset classes and 15 in the other one, and that's not as balanced as we would like to have them. But it has nothing to do with the demand whatsoever.
So in theory, you would strive for an equal weight, depending, of course, on opportunities. That's completely clear, but an equal weight on the three asset class.
Yeah, no. Being the leading hotel developer in Europe, we would like to have 40% in hotel and 30% in resi and in office. But that's a theoretical one, and sure, as much as we like to do spreadsheets, it's never going to be precisely on these levels.
Yeah, of course, thanks. And the next question goes for your guidance. If I compare the comments in the today's presentation with the comments in August, there's a slight change in wording. So you mentioned a new C level in 21 and not in 20. How could we read this? Are you becoming even more positive over the past 3 months, or is it just a clarification?
No, we are more optimistic. I think we guided for a new sea level, which kind of points that once we've hit the 2019 level, that's the new sea level, and that's where we try to sustain profitability. Now we are somewhat more optimistic, with the caveat, of course, that in the past we were criticized for giving guidance for the year only in March. Okay, so in March 2019, we would have given guidance for 2019. We move it now earlier and earlier. We give you more or less a clear indication that there is profit growth in 2020, yeah, as per today. And we believe that this profit growth could lead to a new sea level in 2021, which implies that we also believe that there is a growth of profitability possible in 2021. But we don't want to overpromise and underdeliver, rather on the contrary. So it gets less and less certain, of course, or, you know, it's not that we have it all in-house and only need to book it.
Yeah, but the message is really over the last 2 to 3 months, you get became more confident on that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Then the last question, please, on maybe it's a bit too early, but in general on your dividend policy, is it likely that the growth in EBT or net profits will also lead to a similar rise in dividend, or what other criteria we do have to consider, especially your investment plans?
It's too early. No, I can shed a light on our dividend policy, and it hasn't changed. Our dividend policy says, okay, the dividend is a function of two things. The one is reflecting the profitability of the year. So obviously, from this point of view, you should expect the dividend growth. And we say it is also reflective of our expectation going forward. Now, you know that the profitability, because that was your last question, is expected to grow, which kind of, you know, bottom line results in the revelation that we will not cut the dividend. Rather grow it. Okay?
Okay. So that's from my side. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Andre.
The next question comes from the line of Julius Denauer of Hauck & Aufhäuser Private Bank AG. Please go ahead.
Hi, this is Julius from Hamburg calling, also hit by bad weather as usually. So, yeah, we can need some sun here from UBM. So, yeah, I have several questions. Maybe we go them through them one by one. We already spoke about the disposal, so I would like to know about the firepower that you have for pipeline growth, and if you are currently looking at an increased number of new projects so that you actually will fill that growth with life, and also if you fully plan to fully deploy your financial headroom for new projects.
Maybe I take the first one on the firepower. So if you look at our current cash situation, which is 250 million, and keeping in mind that there are a bit unencumbered assets, I would say from a cash perspective, we are roughly at 350 million, which we could use in order to acquire new projects. But there are other perspectives we also have to take into account. That is, how much can we afford in terms of balance sheet? That's roughly 300 to 400 million as well. And the last number is the net debt. So if we stick to the 50%, which is the optimal number where we think a developer should be, that gives us also a room, I would say, between 350 to 400 million. So as you can see, that is roughly the firepower we have on the table. I think on the pipeline, Thomas has already evaluated where we stand. We are confident at least to keep up with the pipeline we have currently. That is not too easy, and we are willing to increase that with the firepower we have. And the fully deployment, that is depending clearly on the projects we have on the table. So we are not willing to sacrifice our firepower for stupid projects, that's for sure. If the right projects are coming, we are willing to deploy the firepower we have.
Okay, thank you very much. And that also leads to my second question. So can you remind me of the acquisition criteria that you have, and do they have changed in recent quarters? Are there any shifts in that?
No, no change. We look at residential projects with a minimum developer margin of 10%. Office is 15%, and we still can afford the 20% threshold for hotel, and nothing has changed. I guess this is what I wanted to make clear on the last chart, the guidance chart. The reason why we can be so self-confident also is a function of us not having acquired any stupid projects, okay? Because if you make no profit with a big project or leave alone, make a loss, that is hitting twice, you know. So the selection criteria is really key for the future success, and we don't compromise. I mean, you see, we even go a bit harsher with ourselves because we are talking about metropolis, okay? It's not good enough to say it's Germany, because contrary to holders of assets, who have to look at yield, we don't look at Leipzig and won't look at Leipzig. And I have nothing against Leipzig. On the contrary, it's a beautiful city. But for us, from an investor's point of view, you know, we focus on the 7A cities, with the exception of hotel, where we believe that we can also look beyond the 7A cities, strongly depending on the tourist streams. But no change in our criteria.
Okay, that's pretty clear. And then a final question on the financing side. So do you expect to tap the bond market again? And do you, would you expect lower interest rates? I mean, you're quite, you have sufficient funds at the moment, but what is your outlook for 2020 maybe?
Okay. From the perspective of the bond market, we clearly have tapped it now with 120 million, and that was – that was fully used up. So currently, we are not planning to tap the market in the near-term future, the bond market. In terms of interest rates, if I look at today quotes of the latest bond, the risk premium I would calculate out of that would be roughly 230 to 240 basis points. So that came down a bit against the 250 basis points, and still bear in mind that this is a six-year bond and not a five-year one. So we have come down with the rate, but we are seeing there bottoming out. Yeah, I don't expect that we are coming further down, as we are a developer and our business model is a volatile one, even if we do everything against that, and even if we have a strategy which is showing that you can steer a volatile business in a way that you show a decent development and a sustainable development. But at the risk rate and the bond market, I would see that we are close to the bottom of the box.
Okay. Thank you very much. That's it from my side.
Once again, to ask a question, please press star and one on your telephone. The next question comes from the line of Christian Bader of RCB. Please go ahead.
Yes, good morning. I've only got one question regarding your new medium-term guidance. Can you please clarify which main assumptions have you made for your profit guidance, especially 2020-21, please?
Well, for 2020, not too many kind of, you know, conditions precedent to be met. That is driven strongly by the beauty of a change in IFRS and the percentage of completion method, which helps us evening out the profitability. For 21, the assumption is that there will be no substantial change in interest rate policy, number one, and that there will be no what I called black swan. And I see two issues which could be such a black swan, okay, that might not have an impact immediately on 2020, but on 21. The one is the Brexit. I think it's still underestimated what implication it has on the overall, you know, confidence indices. And the other one is the potential trade war between China and the U.S. And now I know that you didn't want to hear my political guru statement, but I believe the uncertainty in the first half of 2020 is going to be a negative one, and the second half of 2020, when Donald Trump wants to get reelected, will resolve this. And of course, we are in the game of psychology, and we are strongly dependent on, you know, when office lessors are kind of jumping on board, and what investors think. And we know the volatility has increased. But for 2020, we are very firm. Don't forget that we've forward sold more than 50% of our next 2 years' portfolio. Okay. And that, of course, gives you a good level of confidence. And then, of course, you can't do forward sales for very much longer than 24 months, that confidence is also kind of impaired by the fact that I can't prove it. But assumptions. I hope this answered your question.
Yeah, maybe a follow-up on your answer now. So is it fair to assume that your overall margins will remain similar, and as a result, your, let's say, upbeat, or let's say your expectations of an increase in profit is more or less top-line driven, so from higher output numbers?
I always have a problem. We are talking about developer margins, which of course is a completely different animal, because our top, I mean, look at our 9 months result, you know, top line is down because we had record completions in the previous year. We had a change in IFRS and what have you, and our profitability is significantly up. So I know that for modeling reasons, it would be much more convenient to model us as a like as if we were an industrial company. I guess you're pointing the right direction. Our confidence midterm and long term is driven by an increase of volume. Okay, we believe that we have the opportunity to still acquire projects, and we have the financial muscle, no doubt, to increase our annual project volume. And by leaving the margins, if you want, at the same level, you get a profitability growth out of it.
All right, that's clear. Thank you.
Okay.
We have a follow-up question from Julius Sinera. Please go ahead with your question.
Yes, just one more question from me, from our team here. Do you see any impact from the weakness of poor on your stock today, for example?
That's a difficult question if you if you know who's my chairman. I think people, particularly here in Austria, still connect us strongly to PAR, and it is our preferred construction partner, no doubt. And we are often in a good position to get capacity ahead of some of our peers. So if there is a choice, you know, do you build with the one developer or with your beloved former daughter company, I still hope that we are not forgotten. But sometimes the connection that is seen between PAR and us is more a psychological one than anything else. I'm, of course, unhappy to see the share price of PAR being hammered. But this is what happens if you have to kind of, you know, put out the news that you have to put out. Overall, you know that I'm a market capitalist, so I think the market gets it right. I wish PAR all the luck to, you know, reestablish a fairer share price.
Okay, that's pretty clear. Thanks.
And there are no more questions at this time. I hand back to Thomas Winkler for closing comments.
Thank you, Haley. All I can say is always a pleasure hearing your voice. Thank you for, I think, the most questions we've ever had. It shows the interest, but, and I must pay a compliment and not out of my endorphins, the questions are also getting more deep and more precise than ever, and I also get the feeling that the market kind of starts to understand our business and our business model much better. So thank you for bearing with us, and looking forward for the next call.